Welcome to the show. On today's episode, we have Dr. Carolyn DeLucia. She is a pioneer of non-invasive sexual wellness treatments, a practicing OBGYN for nearly 30 years, an alternative therapy expert since 2014. She is sought after by device manufacturers and is an expert in the application of cutting-edge treatments, which she offers her New York City and suburban New Jersey patients. In this episode, we will talk about intimate health, hormone replacement therapy, and hormonal imbalances in women. Welcome to the Kat Katibi Podcast, your source for all things health, happiness, and beauty. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. DeLucia, and thank you so much for your time. I'm excited to talk about hormone replacement therapy.
Excellent. I'm very happy to be here, Kat. It's always a pleasure to share anything about female health and how to help women to really be their best at everything that they do.
Could you tell us a little bit about your journey in medicine and how you deviated from a traditional OBGYN to more alternative therapy?
I would be happy to. I finished medical school in 1988, and I decided to be a traditional OBGYN because I enjoyed surgery and I liked the fact that there was some instant gratification type of results with OBGYN. And I got to treat women because men are not as much fun to take care of. But when it comes to taking care of women and doing OBGYN, that instant gratification is basically at the end of 9 months. God willing, we have a healthy, beautiful baby. And if there's a problem hormonally, or if there's a problem that we can't fix by taking care of a woman's hormones, we can do surgery and correct the problem that way. So no matter what the issue is, we can find a solution. And that's gratifying as a physician. When you go into other specialties, you can't always fix things. The diabetic goes home and they eat cake. The hypertensive puts salt on their food. And it's very frustrating trying to take care of patients in that type of situation because they don't always get better. But in OBGYN, pretty much we can help you. The key about going alternatively and going into a more holistic approach to medicine was that there are issues that women experience going through life that are not always addressed sufficiently in traditional medicine. And those situations are things like urinary incontinence, vaginal laxity, the change in our anatomy after childbirth, and with those changes, the angle of the urethra can change. That gives us urinary leakage, which over 30% of women have, and is not always a hormonal fix. But there are non-invasive ways to take care of these issues. The laxity, which is the looseness that can occur after having childbirth, is really something that seems to be taboo to mention. One of my patients described her vagina looking like a used softball glove after childbirth. So that is not a way that you want to present yourself. And that made her inhibited about intimate sexual contact. And that puts a wedge in your relationship. So with these issues not being able to always be addressed traditionally, I was blessed with having encountered a company that made a laser that can treat the walls of the vagina and bring back some support, blood flow, and with that improvement in some of these issues. And then it just spiraled from there.
So you've done things like help women with incontinence with a laser?
Oh, yes. And many other devices. There are different devices on the market, not only laser. Lasers have been modified. They've been used on skin. Women know of Fraxel, which is making tiny little holes on the face, and the body heals that and rejuvenates the skin. We can use the same laser very superficially in the vagina with a special probe and remarkable changes. So that is one little tidbit. Then there's radio frequency is like microwave ovens are radio frequency, but when modified for skin treatments, it can really improve tone, texture, and blood flow, adding collagen and elastin to the vaginal and vulvar tissue. And then there's something called Emcella, which is HIFEM technology. It's the only one on the market, so I can use the name, and it's patented, and it's high intensity focused electromagnetic energy. It's a Tesla magnet. You sit on it and it makes all the pelvic floor muscles contract and rebuild. One session of that, 28 minutes, is equal to 69 hours of Kegel exercises. So it rebuilds the whole pelvic floor, and it's FDA approved for urinary incontinence treatment, and it's the only non-invasive device that is so approved on the market. So there's lots of ways. The last way, non-invasively, is something that's called PRP, platelet-rich plasma. And that can be used as well. And I know it sounds scary, but we inject it right near the bladder neck and it rebuilds tissue and helps urinary incontinence. Very simple office procedure.
Wow. So these sound like all things that I've already done in one fashion or another to my face.
Ah, exactly. And that's why they exist and why they've been modified for women's intimate health.
So what is the O shot and how does that work?
That's the platelet-rich plasma. So PRP is the way I like to explain it. When we are little kids and we scrape our knee, yellow goo comes out, a scab forms, the scab falls off, and there's nice new pink skin underneath. That yellow goo is PRP. So doctors were looking for a way to help patients, mainly athletes, heal quicker and get them back on the field. And their scrapes were healing, but their joints were taking longer. And they tried to figure out why. By analyzing the yellow goo, they realized that it has platelets. And platelets, we know, stop bleeding. What we didn't know is when they are in an area of injury or inflammation even, they burst open and release what we call growth factors. And these growth factors call our stem cells to that area to create whatever tissue is needed to heal that tissue. So in breast, it will grow fat cells. In the face, it grows new collagen and revitalizes, minimizes pore size, helps with even improving coloration and sun damage. And in the vagina, when placed in the area of the G-spot and into the clitoris, improve orgasmic function and urinary incontinence. So it grows new collagen, new blood vessels, and new nerve in the vagina.
Wow. So that's nice. There's a lot of women who get hormonal imbalances, especially after being on the birth control pill, but they're scared of bioidentical hormones. How are they different than the hormones in birth control?
Oh, very different. So the hormones in birth control are completely synthetic. They are, before we knew how to extract bioidentical hormones from plants or other nature sources, the only way to try to make the hormones was in a chemistry lab, very synthetically, and make them look like the real thing, but they aren't identical to what our body makes. So in the United States, thus far, there has only been one type of estrogen used in birth control pills. It's called ethinyl estradiol, and it's artificial, and the levels needed to turn off the ovarian function are rather high. So in a birth control pill, the dosing is way higher than dosing would be required in order for a woman to feel as she does premenopausally in a postmenopausal state. Bioidentical hormones would not turn off ovarian function because the body would recognize it as identical to what it normally makes. So it wouldn't alter function when in a premenopausal woman, giving her back exactly what she already makes. The progesterone in birth control pills is also completely synthetic. We call those as a classification. Progestins look like progesterone, but are not progesterone. The negative about progestins is that they also have what we call androgenic effects, meaning they can cause male pattern type of changes in a woman's body, meaning acne and also mood swings and hair growth. So progestins are not, the body does not recognize those as natural. When a woman goes through menopause, our ovaries completely fail. They go to sleep. They're done, kaput, over. And when that happens, we lose all our estrogen, all of our progesterone, and 90% of our testosterone. And those are the three hormones that our ovaries make. That can cause a lot of changes in women, a lot worse than they could have imagined. Poor sleep, lack of energy, lack of mental acuity, inability to focus, inability to build muscle, lose fat, inability to achieve orgasm, inability to have any sexual interest. So loss of libido and loss of sensation are all testosterone based. Vaginal dryness, hot flashes, night sweats are more estrogen based. So these changes are rather dramatic and alter the quality of a woman's life beyond anything you wish to imagine.
And when do women need to start thinking about if they want to do bioidentical hormones? Because I heard that there's a time limit.
There's a time frame and a time limit, yes. Basically, once a woman goes through menopause, and the only definition of menopause is a year without a period, uninfluenced by anything else. So IUDs can artificially take away our period. The birth control pill can stop periods. That doesn't count. So you have to be on off of all those influences for a solid year and not get a period to have the definition of menopause. Once a woman enters menopause, our bodies will begin to change. Despite everything else I've said, there's more. What you don't see is what's happening inside our blood vessels. Inside our cardiovascular system, we normally have blood flowing back and forth from the heart. And when doing so, estrogen acts like a cleanser of the pipes. It prevents plaque from forming. So premenopausally, most women don't have much in the way of plaque buildup unless they are super terrible in their diet and really do not take care of themselves and have a bad family history. But majority of women will not have significant cardiovascular disease prior to menopause, and estrogen is the benefit there. Once we lose our estrogen, we will start to build up plaque in the blood vessels. What this study that came out in 2002, which was called the Women's Health Initiative, one day when my phone was bouncing off, oh my gosh, ringing like crazy, was July 2002, when the Women's Health Initiative showed that women in this study who used a synthetic estrogen had an increased risk of cardiovascular disease. What we've determined by that study is that in that study, the average age of women was 63 years old, and they had to be menopausal for quite some time and never ever used hormones. That's the perfect storm. You don't want to be 10 years out from menopause and never have used a hormone. That is basically a contraindication to bioidentical hormone therapy or any hormone therapy. So to answer the question of, is there a time frame? The time frame is, as soon as you're having symptoms, you should consider a way of replacing what's missing, as long as it's affecting the quality of your life. And you want to do that before 10 years have passed since your last period.
Let's talk about PCOS and hormonal imbalances in women. What are some ways that you would help women who have estrogen dominance and PCOS, so they also have the high testosterone? When you have too much, what do you do in those cases?
All right. So basically, it's difficult to control those conditions. PCOS, for anyone who's listening who's unfamiliar, is polycystic ovarian syndrome. What I have always explained it to my patients, it is like lazy ovaries. The brain is trying to make the ovaries ovulate, and the ovaries respond by making a bunch of tiny little eggs, which are called, that's why it's called polycystic, because each cyst on an ovary is an egg. So on a ovary with polycystic ovarian syndrome, it, let's say this is the ovary, it has a surrounding of tiny little cysts that we call a pearl necklace sign, which sounds glamorous, but for the patient with PCOS, not so much. It means that the ovary is not responding perfectly to the signals to make an egg on a monthly basis. So women with polycystic ovarian syndrome, the brain is going to try to stimulate the ovary, and you will see a shift in the balance of hormones coming from the pituitary gland, which are FSH and LH. Normally, FSH is always higher than LH. FSH is follicle stimulating hormone, and LH is luteal hormone. The LH in a polycystic ovarian syndrome patient will be higher than the FSH pretty typically, and the other blood finding you will see is that they will have a normal estrogen or higher estrogen and a mildly elevated testosterone. Those issues can cause symptoms that are associated with estrogen and testosterone dominance. The reason why there's estrogen dominance, so to speak, in a polycystic ovarian syndrome patient is because the egg is never being released or not on a regular basis. So when a woman produces, progesterone is produced from where the egg comes out of the ovary. Once the egg is released, what's left behind in the ovary becomes a gland that produces progesterone. When you don't successfully, on a monthly basis, release progesterone, yet you have those hormones coming from your brain saying, hey, ovary, ovulate, and it doesn't, it's releasing estrogen, but not the progesterone to balance that estrogen. So there are symptoms of estrogen dominance. And with that, a polycystic ovarian syndrome patient will look totally feminine. They're not lacking estrogen, but they have also a boost in their testosterone because the ovary is being hyperstimulated. And the area of the ovary, the hilum of the ovary that makes testosterone, is being hyperstimulated as well. So in order to control that, what we try to do is figure out what's making the ovaries lazy. And for some reason, there seems to be a very close correlation with glucose tolerance and insulin resistance. So in patients who have polycystic ovarian syndrome, they often have metabolic syndrome, which is a problem with managing sugars in their body, and insulin resistance, which means when they take in a glucose, any kind of a sugar, any kind of a carbohydrate, their insulin levels rocket, and all their food that they're eating at that time is stored as fat. These women, traditionally, the classic picture, have truncal obesity, meaning fullness in their mid-body section. And they will also have the evidence of hair growth from the testosterone increase, and that will be what we call hirsutism, and they have male pattern hair growth, maybe a diamond on their abdomen versus a triangle of hair growth in the pubic area. That diamond would go up towards the umbilicus, and they will have facial hair increase on their chin and mustache area. So in order to control this, we typically begin with metformin or glucophage, which is a medication that helps to control actually diabetes. And these women are not diabetic, but very often pre-diabetic. And by using this medication, it can aid in return to function of the ovary. And we use spironolactone, which is a medication that will blunt the testosterone effect on the end organs, such as hair follicles and skin for acne.
Have you ever considered maybe raising the progesterone levels? Would that be an option?
That's an option. It may make it feel a little bit better. I don't know if it would reverse the findings. It could, because you're artificially telling the body it ovulated, so it could reset the clock. When I treat my young women with PCOS, I ask them to notify me at any time that they have gone over a 12-week period of time without a natural period. If they've ever gone beyond 12 weeks, I will introduce progesterone.
They are some over-the-counter wild yam cream to increase progesterone. What are your thoughts on those?
I'm glad you asked me that, Kat. I am a little worried about over-the-counter yam extract creams. And the reason is that what we have discovered over trial and error and years of issues in women is that the progesterone in particular does not absorb very consistently through the skin. And that's where a little bit of my traditionalist comes in. Progesterone's very important. And it's important for balancing the effects of estrogen on the uterus and breast tissue. And controlling those levels and having an adequate blood level of progesterone is critical to do that. Unfortunately, I have seen women in their late 20s, early 30s with PCOS who ended up with endometrial cancer because of not adequately balancing that excess estrogen that occurs because of those lazy ovaries. So it's important to be able to achieve adequate levels of progesterone. That being said, I am in favor of bioidentical progesterone orally. You just need to take enough to get it to the adequate level to show protection. So I need to see around a progesterone level of 10 to know that I'm adequately protecting a young woman with PCOS.
Let's talk about thyroid issues.
Okay.
Well, first, why do you feel that more women than ever before are having hormonal issues?
Because I spend the majority of my day taking care of women and also balancing their hormones using bioidentical hormone therapy, and that includes thyroid. Investigating women's thyroids, I am seeing an unbelievable, unprecedented amount of Hashimoto's syndrome. Hashimoto's thyroiditis is a condition where women are fighting off their own thyroid, and it's an autoimmune condition. It's extremely prevalent. I don't know why. I see tons and tons of it. The weird thing about Hashimoto's thyroiditis is that for the majority of women, they will still look like they have totally normal thyroid function. Yet, when you ask them how they're feeling, they're not always feeling their optimal self. So that's a condition that really needs to be addressed with the endocrinologists, who are completely ignoring it for the most part.
I've heard that a lot of women who have estrogen dominance tend to eventually get hypothyroidism. Could you go over some of the symptoms that hypothyroidism has?
Certainly. Hypothyroidism will be typically presenting with lack of energy, fatigue, complete fatigue. And that's the main side effect from hypothyroidism. The second will be hair loss. And it's funny because hair loss can occur if your thyroid is too high or if your thyroid hormone is too low. So hair loss is a sign of a sign of thyroid dysfunction is what it is. So if your thyroid is out of whack, you will notice more hair on your pillow at night when you wake up in the morning, or more hair and falling out in the shower, maybe bald spots, maybe a little bit of a receding hairline that you didn't used to have. So those are things to look out for. And the third typical finding is extremely dry skin.
And is there a difference between Hashimoto's and hypothyroidism symptoms?
Yes, totally. Hashimoto's can present as hypothyroid or not even, and just a general malaise, just a general feeling of something's just not right, and they can't put their finger on it. Sometimes what's happening with Hashimoto's is that the end organ may not be seeing much in the way of hormone levels, and that would be T3, free T3 levels. And that is not often measured by any generalist, internist, or even endocrinologist. It's usually only those of us in integrative medicine, functional medicine, and more of a holistic approach, naturopaths, who will take a look at free T3.
I've heard mixed information on iodine for hypothyroidism. What are your thoughts?
I think that the majority of Americans are iodine deficient. We know this because the only source of iodine in your typical American diet is white salt that's been fortified. So if you are no longer using the little canister in the kitchen with the blue label and the little girl's butt showing in the iodine fortified salt, Morton's salt, then you're not getting iodine unless you're eating a whole lot of seaweed and shrimp. And the majority of Americans, that's not in our diet on a regular basis. So iodine definitely plays a role in thyroid function. It can be replaced. It has to be replaced carefully. The majority of Americans have bromide taking the place of iodine on our thyroid. It takes over because it's found more in our diets, and it's a heavy metal that just takes place of the iodine in our thyroid. So when you begin to replace iodine, you can actually get a metallic taste in your mouth, which is from your body getting rid of the bromide and using the iodine. So that has to be done gradually. If you're beginning to replace iodine, you wouldn't want to do it more than like Monday, Thursday at first, twice a week. Very gradually see how you tolerate it. But I think it can really help the thyroid function. It can also, and it's known to actually decrease the risk of fibroids in women. A lot of women who have fibroids, which are muscular growths of the uterus, can be caused from a lack of iodine. So replacing iodine can slow the growth of fibroids.
What are your thoughts on infectious diseases like Lyme disease or viral infections like Epstein-Barr contributing to underactive thyroid and hormonal imbalances?
I don't know the direct correlation of those chronic diseases, but I think chronic fatigue in and of itself that is a result of those type of chronic infections is devastating to quality of life.
Are there any things as far as diet that women should maybe avoid eating or maybe incorporate into their diet to help with hormonal balance?
I will say that the soy craze is over. I think that you really have to watch how much soy is in your diet if you are not a vegetarian. If you're eating soy as your source of protein in the form of tofu, it's okay to have it a little bit more frequently if you are a vegan. But generally speaking, I have had women hemorrhaging from over intake of soy because it's so estrogenic. So you have to eat everything in moderation. So soy is a very estrogenic product that immediately comes to mind when I think of diet and what's happened with extremes.
Have you had patients that have had very high DHEA causing their other hormonal imbalances?
I have had women who take in too much DHEA come in with issues. So it's important as a provider to ask what your patients are taking as supplements, because there's a lot of DHEA on the market. And to help our listeners understand, DHEA is a hormone that's naturally released from our adrenal gland that in the periphery, meaning when it leaves the adrenal gland and is floating around in our bloodstream and hits our organs, it turns into estrogen and testosterone. That can be a good and a bad thing. So excess estrogen can cause cancers in women. Extra testosterone can cause problems, as we've discussed, like hair growth and acne and aggressive behavior. Generally speaking, there could be too much of a good thing. So you have to be cautious. If you are testing DHEA with a physician and it's found to be low, then taking DHEA over the counter is a good idea. If a woman is postmenopausal, doesn't want to take hormone therapy, she can take DHEA. Generally speaking, I think if she takes around 10 milligrams at bedtime, probably an okay dosage. Generally speaking, she should tell her provider that she's doing so. And I've seen pretty healthy bumps up in testosterone from using DHEA in women. So it can make a difference. There's one product, let me just say, finishing on DHEA, there is a commercially available product, meaning that your insurance might cover it, that is an intravaginal DHEA. It's called Intra Rosa, in the rose. Isn't that cute? And it Intra Rosa is a pharmaceutical grade DHEA that changes into estrogen and testosterone in the local tissues in order to treat vaginal dryness.
I was wondering, do you do bioidentical hormone therapy via telemedicine?
I have not begun to do, but it certainly can be done that way. Except it's a little bit difficult. I'm very picky about what pharmacies I use, and I'm beginning to get my little group that I trust a little bit more nationwide, but you have to be cautious, because bioidentical hormone therapy, if you're using any form of testosterone, is considered a controlled substance. It's like drugs, like using opioids. So unfortunately, it's regulated rather strictly. And until I have a license in 50 states, I have to be a little bit cautious about that. But I do have licenses in 4 states, so I could pretty much cover several thousands of people telemedical wise.
Have you ever heard of pituitary tumors causing hormonal imbalances?
Definitely. There are several different types of pituitary tumors that throw off our hormones. The most common one is a microadenoma. Microadenomas produce most often a prolactin. And prolactin is the hormone that produces milk in our breast. If a woman is suddenly producing milk and she's not breastfeeding and immediately postpartum, then it's time to seek attention from a medical provider. Hyperstimulation of the nipples can cause milk production, especially if the woman has already breastfed, because that's what milkmaids were in the olden days. There were women who had children who breastfed for other women and helped to take care of their children. So women can produce milk at any time once they've stimulated the glands in the breast to do. That being said, elevated prolactin levels from the pituitary gland, from a tumor that's called a microadenoma, will produce milk in the breast, and the presenting factor will be milk discharge spontaneously. When you have a microadenoma and it's producing too much prolactin, it's going to throw off some what we call pulsatile release of other triggering hormones that actually control the thyroid. So if very often a woman who has elevated prolactin will then have problems with her thyroid, and it's all because of the stimulating hormones that are produced in the pituitary that are thrown off by feedback loops, is what we call it. Endocrine is really complicated.
And you mentioned there's several types of pituitary tumors. What are the other ones?
They're macroadenomas. Microadenomas are usually microscopic and very often are not treated with surgery, but then there are macroadenomas, which are large tumors that then need to be removed. The pituitary gland sits very close to our optic chiasm, which is where our optic nerves cross in our brain. And when there's a tumor on the pituitary, it's actually putting pressure on our optic nerves, and you will have visual disturbances as a sign of a pituitary enlarged tumor.
What about endometriosis? Are there any treatments for endometriosis, maybe new devices other than surgery?
Endometriosis is a true nemesis of any woman. It's an excruciatingly painful condition that can cause terrible pain and irregularity in menstrual cycles, in addition to infertility with some scarring that can occur over time. So endometriosis is a very difficult condition. What's actually happening is that the lining of the uterus that normally sheds as our period is going outside the fallopian tubes, which happens in every woman. However, in women who have endometriosis, they don't seem to be able to get rid of that tissue, and it seeds itself and makes tiny little implants all throughout the abdomen. And mainly it begins in the pelvis, so it'll affect the fallopian tubes, the ovaries, the back of the uterus, and then spreads over time. Endometriosis can be found in lung tissue. So endometriosis can get anywhere, and it's tiny micro implants of the endometrium, the stuff that's normally shed on the outside and that lining of the uterus that usually goes away. But then it begins to have, the way I like to explain it to patients who have it, little micro injuries or micro periods inside the abdomen. And because it's not all getting the same blood supply, meaning it's not seeing all the same hormonal levels as you would see through main bloodstream feeding directly to the uterus, it has a pattern of its own. So women can have intermittent pain from endometriosis. It's not only with their menstrual cycle, because those little areas are getting inflamed at different points in the cycle. So endometriosis is nasty. One of the ways that we treat it is by attempting to turn off ovarian function. When a woman has endometriosis and they're very young, sometimes just putting them on the birth control pill can be enough to stifle it out for a while. One of the best cures that we know of for endometriosis is pregnancy. Pregnancy is a solid 9 months of no cycling of ovarian function. And that can be, in a lot of women, curative. It resets the clock. All the endometriosis implants die off during those 9 months because they're not seeing that cyclical pattern, and the women improve postpartum. But that's not an easy fix for everyone. Like, oh, just go get pregnant. Or most of us are avoiding that for the majority of our lives. So rather than encouraging it. So that's one way. Another way is, like I said, the birth control pill if it's early on. And then we have very heavy duty medications that either come in injection called GnRH analogs, GnRH antagonists. And these medications, such as Orilissa or Oriana now, can be used for long-term treatment of endometriosis orally through pills and or medications like Lupron or Depo-Provera. different ways of turning off ovarian function.
Going back to estrogen dominance, because I know if you have endometriosis, you tend to also have estrogen dominance. Are there any ways that you can help detoxify the excess estrogen quicker?
The only way that really is to add progesterone and DIM, which is a supplement that helps the way we break down estrogen. So that's a possibility to see. DIM can diminish estrogenic effects in tissue. So breast soreness that can occur from estrogen dominance and that kind of emotional swing. So DIM is a decent supplement for that. The other is progesterone to balance. But it's very dip. When you truly have estrogen levels in the 600 and 800s, it's not easy to lower that or balance that.
I was born with excessively high DHEA. We don't know why. I was very thin, but I had high acne, androgens, yes. Testosterone, everything was like shooting up.
Yes.
And then I went on the birth control pill. And after getting off the birth control after 10 years, then I became estrogen dominant as well as the other two things.
Okay.
So what are your thoughts on what someone in my situation should do?
What I hear you saying is congenital adrenal hyperplasia, which is a condition of the adrenal gland that is making an excess of DHEA. DHEA, as I had mentioned before, turns into estrogen and testosterone in the bloodstream. It's a difficult condition to manage as you've lived a lot better than I could say. So I think you're doing remarkably well at managing it because you look wonderful. And there doesn't seem to be any evidence of hirsutism or anything like that. I think that you've stayed on top of it very effective. But it's an adrenal problem. And adrenal excess is one of the most difficult conditions to manage because it also involves cortisol release and all kinds of metabolic situations that compound the situation. But estrogen dominance, if I were you, I would strongly recommend taking DIM if you aren't already, and just making sure you're cycling with the progesterone. Are your menstrual cycles regular?
Yes, they're very regular.
And this is off the pill?
Yeah, no pill.
Okay. That's good. And what symptoms are you having from the hormonal levels in your system right now?
Menstrual migraines.
Okay.
My cramps have become much more manageable, so I'm okay there. Weight gain, fluid retention, things okay. like that. But yeah, okay. I think I've managed it pretty well. But any other tips you have will always be appreciated.
Okay. I'm trying to think of what else other than what you've done already. I would certainly avoid anything with estrogen in it, you know, any estrogenic factors like soy, absolutely avoid to no end. But I would say progesterone. Are you taking progesterone?
No.
Oh, okay. That you could certainly do. You could probably take bioidentical, it's called micronized progesterone, orally 100 milligrams at bedtime would probably make you feel a little bit better all the time. And it wouldn't throw it off your natural menstrual cycle, but it might balance some of that elevated estrogen. Do you know what your estrogen level is?
I don't know exactly, but I know if the range is, let's say it's 1 to 1,000, mine was 2,000. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Understood. Understood.
Same with testosterone. But progesterone yes. was normal, but with the other two, it looked low.
Okay. And do you know what your testosterone level has been?
Not double the highest range, but like maybe 50% more than the highest range.
Okay. All right. Did you have negative side effects from it other than increased libido?
That's not negative.
Exactly. That's exactly. Some of those effects aren't so bad. Unless you were having hirsutism, I wouldn't. Postmenopausally, we elevate testosterone levels pretty high. I'm walking around somewhere. Oh, well, I just measured it. What was it? I think it was 150. So normal's up to 80 at most labs. So we do supplement postmenopausally rather high. But you know, we're not worried about childbearing. I wouldn't want to have a baby with my blood levels at that of testosterone at that level. So I would want that normalized if you're considering conceiving.
I already have. It's a little late for that.
Everything okay with the baby?
She's 8. She seems fine.
Oh, my yes. goodness. You seem 8.
No. Yeah. I also wanted to ask you, do you have any other tips for women before we go on how to help balance their hormones or maybe some natural remedies for when we're having hormonal migraines or things like that?
Hormonal migraines, you need actually, that's from the estrogen withdrawal. For you, that's because you had such a high level of estrogen and it's withdrawn and your blood vessels in your brain are getting constricted. That's what's happening. So for you, that's one time when you could have a little soy, or you might want to even get a little bit of bioidentical estrogen gel and apply it to your thigh. I give that to my patients, bioidentical estrogen gel. The pharmaceutical company that makes it's called Divigel. You can get it commercially. So if you could just apply that to your upper thigh when you're having a menstrual migraine, it's a very low level. It's 0.025, very low. And it usually takes the migraine.
And I've also heard that high histamine foods when you're menstruating mm-hmm. affect you more. Like your histamine levels you're more sensitive.
Yes. Yeah. Women get worse allergic reactions around their menses. And we've seen weird reactions from the vaccines lately. Women having their menstrual cycles thrown off by the vaccines. We are not exactly sure why, but it is happening.
So what are your thoughts on the vaccines? If you're a woman who's still menstruating, should mm-hmm. you time it a specific way to avoid as many adverse reactions as possible?
That's a good question. I never really thought of it in that way, but I certainly can address that and answer it. My feeling is absolutely no reproductive woman should get the J&J vaccine. I would avoid it at all costs. When it comes to using one of the other two that are commercially available in the United States, timing wise, I would do it immediately following a period, like day 5 to 10 of the menstrual cycle, day 1 being the first day of bleeding. And the reason for that is just to try to avoid it throwing everything off.
Good idea. Is there anything else before we go that you want to share about bioidentical hormones and anything that we need to know about?
The one little thing I want to say about bioidentical hormone therapy is that the FDA is trying to take it away from us. And that will be the biggest insult to female sexual health and well-being. One of the questions we have that we always ask as a physician, do we age because we lose our hormones or do we lose our hormones because we age? And it's the former more likely than the latter. We are aging because we lose our hormones. I'm actually writing a chapter in a book with a woman who's doing extensive work on trying to understand why women's ovaries fail so much sooner than males' testicles. Men can produce sperm and reproduce well into their 80s, yet women start having ovarian function issues as early as 35. 32 to 35 is when we begin to have our eggs going awry. So why is that the case? So it's clear that we begin to age when we lose our hormonal function and our sexual hormones from our ovaries and our testes are critical in optimizing our health. So if the FDA makes taking away our natural hormonal avenue of getting what's healthiest for us, something that our body naturally makes, it's going to impact so the well-being of a huge quantity of people in the United States. So I hope and pray that doesn't happen. And any kind of support that anyone can give in that regard to any organization that they see that comes along that's supporting it, please do.
Have they said why they're trying to get rid of it? What is the reason?
Their reasoning is that they're cracking down on the pharmacies, the compounding pharmacies that are producing the products. It is difficult to get a good quality bioidentical hormone, and they have not been regulating the compounding pharmacies at all. And the other aspect of it is they're saying, oh, there's not enough clinical evidence that they're important or if they are helpful or safe. And that's not really true either. So when the actual data was delivered to the FDA and the council, I don't think from the best of our understanding that there was a fair and equitable information given. It wasn't addressed.
Do you think it could be because it takes money away from pharmaceutical companies?
Oh, I think it certainly does. And lobbying and all of that type of approach is always, the money's the root of all evil, my dear. Yes, I think it definitely plays a role. And there are some companies trying to come out with what they're calling bioidentical formats of hormone therapy. And that's so far impossible because if it's bioidentical, it's not considered a drug, therefore does not have to be regulated by the FDA. So these companies are altering them mildly, very slightly, and trying to call them bioidentical, but they're not.
Is it because you cannot patent bioidentical hormones?
Correct.
No, it's money can't make it legal. Isn't that just always what happens?
Hopefully it'll never happen. They've threatened before. So hopefully we will persist.
Could you tell us about your online course and your book?
Absolutely. My book, you can download for free. I've written two books. One is called Ultimate Intimacy. The other is called Ultimate Connection. Ultimate Intimacy is free at www.ultimateintimacy.net. And my course, you can go to www.drcarolindelucia.com and go ahead and take that course. The course is listed on the website under courses.
I'm going to put all of that information in the show notes. Which social media platform are you the most active on?
Instagram, most likely, and that is Dr. Carolyn DeLucia.
Awesome. And again, thank you so much, Dr. DeLucia, for being with us here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kat, and always what you do for all women and their well-being.
I had an episode a while back with Dr. Mona Fahoum of Feminescence, and we spoke about Feminescence, Maca Harmony, and their Maca products. And if you're a woman who's ever had hormonal imbalances, if you're trying to come off the birth control pill, or even if you're going through menopause, this is a natural way to help ease that transition and to help balance your hormones. There's nothing quite like it, so go to feminescence.com, enter code KAT15, KAT15, for 15% off any of their single pack products, and definitely go check out the episode. Just search for Mona Fahoum on my podcast and listen. You won't regret it. Thank you for listening to the show. Please show your support for the podcast by leaving a 5-star review. Learn more about the show and what I have to offer you at katkatibi.com. Consider being a part of the new Patreon, where episodes are ad-free and you'll find extra bonus content. send a voicemail question, or email me. Check the show notes for more information.
This podcast is for informational merrymakings and metaphysical purposes only. Statements and views are not medical advice. This podcast, including CACA-TB, disclaim any adverse effects by the use of information you may have heard. Opinions of guests are totally their own. This podcast does not endorse statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications, credibilities, or sanity. Individuals may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to on the podcast. If you think you have a medical problem, consult with a licensed medical physician, not just the spirit of your ancestors while on ayahuasca.